Anya stood on the ridge between the two camps, looking down at the university dig. Wispy clouds had drifted across the moon, cutting the light and making it more difficult to pick out the details. She hadn't found Dari, but then the ridge was long and dark, and she had no intention of calling out for him. She'd listened intently during her climb, thinking she might hear him scrambling up the slope or moaning if he'd slipped and hurt himself. Of course, if he'd really hurt himself, he might not be making any noise at all, or if he'd been killed by her assailants. The breeze had died down since her previous trip, and she was sorry for that. The cool wind had been invigorating and had kept her from sweating. She unzipped her purple pussycat jacket and flapped the edges of it to cool her. She shouldn't be so warm, she thought, and so she felt her face. It was fever hot.
Crap. Like I need a fever on top of everything else.
It was probably the result of the damage and strain of the last who knew how many hours, and not giving herself a chance to rest. She usually healed quickly, if she afforded herself an opportunity to do so. She put her weight on her good ankle and scanned the site. Someone had left a lantern on in one of the tents. John's.
Can't see enough to...
Anya smiled with an idea and climbed higher to where she'd encountered the two assassins. It took her several minutes to reach the spot, and only a minute more to find what she was looking for. The night vision goggles the second man had been wearing.
Perfect.
She fitted them on and tightened the band so they wouldn't fall off. It cast the world into a landscape of blacks and greens, like something out of a science fiction movie. She'd used something similar before, and so it didn't take her long to adjust. Then she started looking along the ridge for Dari.
This is nuts. I should be back with the students and Wes.
She felt responsible for them, but she also felt responsible for the bikers she'd dragged into this because she needed transportation. She hesitated, looking down the slope and to the students' tents. Then she was looking beyond them, to a jeep that was cutting across the ground and driving up to the canopy where the sifting tables were. Vehicles weren't supposed to come right up to either dig site, she knew. There were designated places for them to park some distance back. Anya crouched, seeing four men spill out of the vehicle, while at the same time seeing a lone figure emerge from one of the smaller tents. The shape and the smooth head told her who it was.
Dari, keep your head down.
He'd obviously heard the car approach as he clung to the side of the tent, trying not to be seen. The four men spread out across the camp.
Oh, no.
One of the men toted an assault rifle, an M16 by the look of it. Another carried an Uzi. The remaining men had M14 mini rifles and pistols, the latter probably 9mm P85s from the silhouettes. She counted silently to 10 in Latin to calm her nerves, and then she started down the rise, intent on getting Dari out of there. She touched the hilt of the sword with a thought, ready to call it into her hand in a heartbeat. Not that the sword would do her a lick of good unless she was in close. She was halfway down the slope when she saw Dari start up several yards to the north. The man with the M16 was coming around the side of the tent and had spooked him. Anya skidded the rest of the way down, summoning the sword as she went and clamping her teeth against a cry of pain. It felt as if someone had shoved a hot poker against her ribs. The M16 fired, a bullet narrowly missing Dari. It struck a rock at the base of the ridge. A muzzle flash flared in Anya's night vision goggles. She couldn't tell if Dari had been hit, but he was still moving. The other three men were alerted by the gunshots and came running. One man raised his pistol in his left hand and fired into a tent as he went. The man with the Uzi sprayed another tent. So many men sent to kill one woman? Anya swallowed hard as she realized they weren't just sent out here to kill her. A hit team this size would be sent to kill everyone, and maybe do a little fast cleanup work afterward. She had been right to pull the students away from the dig. Dari spotted her and was crab-crawling toward her, sending bits of rock and clumps of mud up in his wake.
Anya!
Get down! Drop! Now!
Two of the gunmen fired just as Dari took her advice. The bullets thudded into the rise, rock shards ricocheting, just as Anya managed to reach Dari.
Where'd you find a sword?
In the rocks.
Dari let her tug him up. The two started weaving up the ridge. She found an upthrust of granite and shoved Dari behind it. She tucked herself next to him as more shots ricocheted off the rocks.
What sword's nice, but we need a gun!
A gun would be great. Maybe I'll take one of theirs.
Find those goggles in the rocks, too?
Yeah. Listen, Dari, I'm gonna draw them away. You need to get up and over to the other camp and warn them we have company.
I can't leave you alone.
Yes, you can. There are 18 people in that camp. I'd rather that not turn into 18 corpses.
Dari nodded. She saw his Adam's apple bobbing nervously, as if he was constantly swallowing, and his hands clenching and unclenching. He wanted a little adventure? He had it in spades, she thought, hoping he'd live to tell Nate and the rest of his friends about it. He started to say something, but she was vaulting away, tumbling down. A bullet whizzed by her head. Another ricochet sent gravel flying against her goggles. She cleared the bottom of the ridge and dashed to the closest tent. Bullets from the Uzi chewed up the ground behind her. She ducked behind the canvas and caught her breath, then sprinted to the next tent as more rounds ripped into the canvas. She spun and then flattened herself on the ground behind John's tent. Bullets chewed the canvas and burst the lantern inside. Anya instantly smelled smoke and realized the oil from the lantern had spilled on something and caught fire. The growing light registered painfully in her goggles, and she looked away. She squeezed the hilt of her sword tight in her hand. She heard the men reloading.
That should be the Creed woman. Her mom and Syed want her dead.
Anya got carefully to her feet and sprinted to the south. She shrugged out of her jacket as she went, transferring the sword from hand to hand so she could pull out her arms.
Kill her! Shoot her now!
Anya dove into the shadows, dropping the jacket strategically, then rolling and coming to a rest on her stomach, sword flat against the ground, and little rocks biting into her. She had her eyes trained on the men. Her side hurt fiercely, and she hoped she hadn't done any further damage to her ribs. The two with pistols and M14 minis approached from the northeast, her left. They were almost shoulder to shoulder and of similar builds. They weren't amateurs. She could tell that in the way they moved and how they constantly looked around for a target, trained by some military or in a mercenary camp, she guessed.
She went this way.
Into the darkness.
Anya dug the fingers of her left hand into the damp ground as they moved closer. The other two appeared, skirting the ridge and deep in the shadows. She might not have seen them were it not for her goggles. The one with the Uzi jammed another clip into it, tossing the empty one on the ground. He was wearing gloves, and so had no fear that fingerprints would draw the authorities to him. The other leveled an M16. If they weren't walking in pairs, Anya thought she could have taken them, come at them one by one, fast, with her sword. As her gaze flitted back and forth between them, the ones with the pistols coming dangerously close, she saw that one of the English-speaking men pointed at the ground.
I almost fell in that.
There's a rope ladder. Think she went down?
I would. Where else would she have disappeared to?
He pulled a flashlight from his belt, flicked it on, and aimed the beam in the crevice.
I'm going to check it out. There's a purple jacket caught partway down. It's got blood on it. We might have hit her.
He clipped the flashlight to his belt so it lit up his leg. Gripping the pistol in his right hand, he started down, using his left to help him climb. Anya allowed herself a small, grim smile. Of course the jacket had blood on it. It was blood spatter from the men she'd fought and killed on the ridge. The first assassin's companion stayed up top and waved to the two others.
Remy's checking out a cave. He thinks she's down there. He found her jacket. Hassan, you go with him.
Anya held her breath as the one with the Uzi slung the subgun over his arm and followed the first man down the rope ladder.
We'll stay here, just in case she's still around the camp and tried to throw us a trick.
Dig. Sayid calls this a dig. Says the professor doesn't like it to be called a camp.
Whatever. We just need to kill her.
And everyone else out here. The students have to be hiding somewhere. Kill the students, Sayid told me. Then kill the archaeologist to the east. The professor wants no witnesses. He wants it to look like thieves after the artifacts. And the one of us who kills the American girl would get a bonus. If she is down in that hole, Hassan would get the money. His Uzi will turn her into pudding.
Anya chose that moment to rise and rush at the two men standing near the hole. The one with the M16 looked up first, bringing the gun up in the same motion. The bullet slammed into her right arm and through it, but it didn't stop her. She landed in a crouch. The second bullet screamed above her head. She rose immediately. Anya knocked the M16 back with her shoulder as she lunged forward, both hands gripping the sword now. The blade sunk into the gunner's chest. Anya yanked her blade free as the second man rushed her. Anya dropped and rolled past him, jumped up and came at him from behind. She swung the sword. The blade went through his waist to his spine. He fell forward, legs and arms quivering, and Anya planted her good foot on his back and yanked the blade free. He continued to shake, blood gurgling in his mouth.
Mercy to you.
She jabbed him in the back.
You bitch!
Anya spun to look into the crevice. The man with the Uzi was nearly to the top.
No, you don't.
She swung the blade at the ropes holding the ladder. Bullets sprayed up, chipping the stone around the opening and causing Anya to dance back. Anya took a moment to catch her breath, and then she looked into the crevice. Directly beneath her was the broken body of the man with the Uzi. Standing over him was the other man who'd climbed down. She watched him feel for a pulse and shake his head, then turn the flashlight on the coil of rope ladder. Finally, he aimed the light up, and Anya backed away from the edge. She willed the sword away. The last shooter was trapped. She'd leave him for the police to deal with. She hoped he wouldn't damage anything in the temple.
Ah!
Anya felt her right arm. It was slick with blood from where the bullet had passed through. She worked at the left sleeve of her blouse until she ripped it free. She wrapped it around her wound and tied it tight to staunch the blood. She figured Dr. Michaels would have first aid supplies. She needed to get back to the archaeologists, for her sake and theirs. She snatched up the M16 and reloaded it. Then she stuffed some extra ammunition in the back pocket of her jeans. She took a pistol, too, and extra rounds. Neither man had identification or a wallet, though one of them had a wad of money. She shoved the roll in her pocket and checked the jacket of the rifleman. He was the smallest of the quartet, and so his jacket would prove the best fit. She still felt feverish, and so she knew she needed to keep warm. Anya found keys in an inside pocket as she put it on. She wouldn't have to hoof it back over the ridge after all. Anya spotted three more M16s in the back of the Jeep, an M14 mini rifle, along with an AK-47, a large box of ammo, an empty duffel bag, a small carton of grenades, and a satellite phone. She grabbed the phone and slid into the driver's seat. She dropped it on the passenger seat, along with the M16 she'd taken off the dead man. She laid the pistol in her lap. She backed up the Jeep and turned it around, trying to disturb the ground around the dig as little as possible. She was glad the top was down. The breeze helped make her fevered skin feel a bit cooler. How did these men manage to get all these guns and the grenades into this country?
Silly thought. How do they get guns into any country?
She kept her night vision goggles on as she drove. There was no road here, and she was not used to driving sitting on the right side of a vehicle. She kept the headlights off and relied on the black-green sci-fi world the goggles showed to her. Maybe there would be a way to trace this Jeep to someone. At the very least, the authorities might be able to get something out of the man left alive in the underground temple. Perhaps he would tell them where Oliver's body was, and the name of the mystery man who hadn't wanted to be seen and who was behind all this chaos. She'd heard the men talking about the professor, whom she was certain was this Dr. Hammam the students mentioned. And the men used the name Syed. Something niggled at the back of her brain, something familiar that was hanging just out of range. She slapped her hands against the steering wheel in frustration.
What am I missing?
Maybe Wes would know. Maybe this Syed was important in archaeology circles in this part of the world. She hit a rut and the Jeep jumped, jarring her and knocking her teeth together.
I'm gonna need a vacation when I'm through with this.
Peering ahead into the night, she spotted headlights coming in her direction, two pairs.
Please let that be the police.
There were high grasses ahead, and she pulled into them and killed the engine. Just to be sure, she told herself. The two Jeeps passed her, only one of them close enough for her to get a decent look. The first one was dark-colored and being driven too fast and carelessly through the preserve. There were no roads, so it was bouncing over the uneven earth and digging up bushes and ground cover in its wake. She cringed at the destruction. Four men were inside, at least two with rifles. She saw the silhouettes of the guns sticking up in the back. Definitely not the police. More goons from Dr. Hammam and Syed. She thought about trying to take them out. She had rifles and ammo, and her night vision goggles would give her the edge. But there were four of them, and more in the other Jeep. Bad odds. She sat silent and still till they plowed past. They'd find their dead fellows, and maybe the one in the cave below, and who knew what kind of rage that would unleash. She started the engine and cut through the tall grass, carefully driving along the path the other jeeps had torn up to hide her passage from a casual search should the bad guys come back this way. Her course took her around the northern edge of the spine, where she noticed what, at first, she thought was an access road. But it was too narrow, a hiking trail then, or a road from years ago that had been allowed to grow over. She took it, and then drove across a wide, fast creek, the jeep having no trouble with the jagged terrain. The adrenaline rush was wearing off, and the pain was surfacing in her arm to compete with her other aches. She fought a wave of dizziness and stepped a bit harder on the gas pedal when she emerged from a copse of small white stringy barks and ironwoods. She saw four vehicles at the edge of her vision, two of them SUVs. From her trip here yesterday, she knew they belonged to Dr. Michaels and his crew.
I'm close.
It wasn't a far walk, and she nearly pulled up next to an SUV with the intention of hoofing it the rest of the way. But then she drove past it, finding a gap between two stringy barks and a stretch of uneven grassland. She'd been this way before on each of the 3 days she came out with Oliver. She leaned forward in the seat, nerves jangling, and listening for gunfire, screams, anything that might tell her there was trouble ahead.
Nothing. They're safe for the moment.
But not for terribly long, she knew. The other men at the student dig had to have found the place deserted, and the bodies. They'd be coming this way next, if they weren't already. Anya's eyes widened in terror as she made out ruts in the grass ahead, deep and muddy and very, very fresh.
Please, God.
She pressed the accelerator and bumped towards the dig, seeing the tops of the tents ahead, courtesy of the scant moonlight that came through the clouds and her night vision goggles. She also saw another jeep, just like the one she was driving. Anya roared into the camp, front left wheel clipping a tent post and bringing down one of the archaeologists' tents. She grabbed the M14 Mini in one hand and the pistol in the other and jumped out of the jeep. Something glowed in the camp, casting a ghastly, ghostly green that was almost painful to look at. She scuttled forward, guns in hand, and slipped behind Dr. Michael's tent and peered around a corner. She blinked furiously and flipped up her goggles with her forearm. In the center of the site, near the large canopy tent, a fire roared. Three men with rifles stood as if at attention, backs to the fire, and facing the archaeologists and students. A broad-shouldered man stepped out from behind another tent and aimed an Uzi at Anya. Anya ducked to avoid the gunfire.
Kill her! We'll take care of the rest!
She instantly poked her head back out, returned fire, and quickly counted. 17. There should be 20 with Dari. Dari's face was a bloody mess, as was one of the security guards. Anya fired again and missed the man shooting at her. She'd been distracted by the scene behind him. Now he was moving, crouching as he ran, using the shadows of a tent for cover as he came closer. She squeezed off another shot and dropped him. All but Dari had their hands in the air. She raced forward and saw that his hands were tied in front of him. Then she saw two men raise their rifles to their captives to shoot them, while the third had turned his attention to her. Anya spun and grabbed cover near the body of the gunman she'd just dropped. Bullets whizzed into the ground near her. She raised the rifle to her aching shoulder and stood to get a clear shot. She dropped the man who'd been moving toward her and one of the others, hitting one in the head and one in the neck, but she missed the third. Anya ran forward, firing as she went. The gun jammed and she tossed it, bringing up the pistol as the assassin dropped to a crouch, obscured behind the bonfire. The archaeologists and students broke their line and huddled together. There were no more shots. The gunman must be fleeing. Anya swung around the fire, feeling its heat against her face.
Anya!
She kept running, seeing the man's boot prints in the muddy ground and following them. He was running toward the trees.
I'll come back!
His tracks ended where the grass began at the edge of the site, but Anya could hear him thrashing through the brush. She flipped her night vision goggles down and followed him in, moving as quickly as she could with her injuries. She closed the distance. Finally, she spotted him just as he was swinging a pistol around to shoot at her. She fired first, missing him by several inches and shredding the bark on a small tree. She got off a second shot. She kept the gun out and advanced, ready to shoot again if he so much as twitched. He was definitely dead, Blood ran from his chest and mouth, and he wasn't breathing. She prodded him with her foot to be certain. Then she knelt and looked for identification. Of course, she found none. Time to round everyone up and pass out the weapons, she thought. There were two more jeeps full of men who might be heading their way. Oh. She was halfway to the bonfire when she collapsed. Anya blinked and woke suddenly. She was about 10 feet from the bonfire on a cot that someone had pulled out of a tent, a blanket draped over her. There was a cool rag on her forehead, which fell into her lap when she sat up. Instantly, she was dizzy again.
Oh. Oh, God.
Her legs were tangled in the blanket. She struggled with it for a moment before she won and balled the blanket on the end of the cot. Then she stood, carefully, so the dizziness wouldn't send her to the ground again. She saw the jeep she'd driven into the camp, and the tent next to it that she'd taken down with a tire. Dari, Cindy, Wes, Jennifer, and two security guards were using the jeep and the collapsed tent as cover and were firing at something she couldn't see. A quick look around the rest of the camp showed that the students and the rest of the archaeologists were near the canopy tent, on the other side of the bonfire. Anya started toward the jeep, trying not to pass out. She must have collapsed earlier, and someone had put her on the cot and tried to take care of her. Her arm had been dressed. That six people were shooting meant that they must have retrieved some guns from the jeep. And more than guns, she realized after a moment, Dari lobbed a grenade. Dari threw another one before Anya could reach them. Jennifer caught sight of Anya and grinned wildly.
Dari's got blood worth bottling. He got one with that last throw.
Cindy reached into the back of the jeep and pulled out a grenade, but Dari grabbed it from her.
Let me toss one.
Hey, I don't want you blowing us all up.
Cindy made a face, picked up a pistol, and started firing again. It looked as if she actually knew how to use it. Through the smoke from the grenades, Anya finally saw what they were shooting at. The men who had driven toward the student camp while she was driving away. She shouldered up between Cindy and Dari.
How long was I out?
No one answered, but Jennifer reached behind Cindy and passed Anya an M16.
I used to target shoot when I was in college. Haven't lost my touch. I nailed one of the bastards.
Indeed, as Anya fitted the rifle to her sore shoulder, she saw two bodies. One was sprawled across the hood of a jeep, and the other one was on the ground in pieces from the grenades. She fired, shattering the windshield of the closest jeep. Not military grade, she thought. She fired again, just as tires squealed and the jeeps pulled back. The remaining men, three in each jeep that she could see, returned fire. But the archaeologists had excellent cover and knew when to duck. The vehicles roared away.
I hated to throw those grenades. I don't want to hurt the preserve.
Wes slapped him on the back.
Saved our necks, you did. Now the government can replant. And you kept him from entering our sight.
For the first time, Anya saw deep lines on his face from worry and fatigue, and maybe from loss. She looked at him and met his sad gaze.
They killed Josie.
Now that the immediate danger was past, Anya could see that Cindy's eyes were puffy from crying.
They wanted to know where you were. And when we couldn't kill them, they shot Jeff. And then Matthew.
She put her head in her hands, and her shoulders started to shake.
How could something like this happen, Dr. Michaels?
Shot Josie for the same reason, mostly. Shot her in the head like an execution. They wanted to know if we'd left the sites any time yesterday or today. Or if we talked to anyone.
Because one man didn't want to be seen. Or maybe two men didn't want to be seen together.
A shell-shocked John shuffled up behind them. He was white from fear, his eyes unnaturally wide.
Dr. Imam was with that man with all the scars.
The man is called Syed.
Syed. That was the guy with Doc, right?
It looked as if John might topple at any moment. Cindy raised her head. Her face was a red mask of anger and disbelief.
He creeped me out. The reason why, I guess, if these were his men. But Doc wouldn't have had anything to do with this. Just that creepy Syed bloke. God, please don't let them come back.
John knelt next to Cindy and stroked her hair.
Syed, that name sounds familiar somehow.
Oh. My God, I know who it is. Syed Husam. A very bad man. Syed Husam, the international terrorist. A murderer 100 times over. They call him the Sword.
That's what had been tickling the back of Anya's thoughts. It wasn't that she was well informed about everything going on in the world, but she did read newspapers online, and she had read several articles about bus and subway bombings in London. Syed Husam, the Sword, had come up amid the reports. He was an international terrorist whose name had been associated with bin Laden and Saddam Hussein and others of their ilk. Someone for hire, and who supposedly had his own agenda. She'd seen his picture. Why hadn't she recognized him when she looked through Oliver's camera? Because they were far away and she didn't get a good look at him, she reasoned. And because she certainly wasn't expecting to see an international terrorist at a student dig in a forest preserve northwest of Sydney. Last she'd read, he was in London, having bombed the bleachers at a soccer stadium. He certainly doesn't want anyone to know he's here, she thought.
This isn't just about Egyptian relics. Wes, the Sword bombs things. He doesn't steal artifacts. At least I don't think he does.
Then what is it about? I'd bloody well like to know why Josie had to die.
In Matthew.
I don't know, but I will find out.
Why Jeff had to get shot.
John looked up at Anya, tears coming down his face now too.
Shot? Someone's hurt? They left someone alive? Jeff is alive?
Yeah, they shot him in his knee. Said they were going to shoot him in the other knee. And then cut off his fingers one by one if he didn't tell them where you were.
But then Matthew put himself between Jeff and that horrid man, and Matthew took the next bullet.
They shot Josie just after. They were going to shoot Jennifer next, maybe shoot us all. Hell, certainly shoot us all. But you showed up.
Wes leaned against the Jeep. He hadn't let go of the pistol. He peered out into the darkness. The air was thick with the smell of smoke from the grenades and the gunfire.
They're not coming back. We killed too many of them. They're going back into whatever hole they crawled out of.
Jennifer's shoulders slumped in relief. She hovered over John and Cindy, gently touching each one.
So is Saif. I'm afraid, too. And so very, very angry.
I didn't say we were safe, but those men won't be back, at least for a while. Wes, did you call the police?
Yeah. And before this second wave of bastards showed up, I also called for an ambo.
For Jeff?
For that fellow Dari walloped the crap out of.
You have one of them? Alive?
Oh, they raced in here in their Jeep, the first batch, jumping out and shouting at us. Well, one of them shouted anyway. Only one spoke English, from what we could tell. Then another one started waving a gun in my face and I tackled him.
And hit him in the throat. I thought Dari killed him at first. Broke his friggin' neck.
John got up and tugged Cindy with him. He dug the ball of his foot into the ground.
That's when they beat Dari up. Then they lined us up like we were going to be all shot by a firing squad. Shot Jeff in the knee.
Anya nodded and stepped away from the Jeep and turned toward the bonfire. The blaze had died down a little, and she could no longer make out the outlines of furniture, only pieces of burning wood. She walked toward the cluster of people beyond it. Jeff would be there, no doubt tended to, as someone had tended to her. And hopefully the man Dari had hit in the throat was there. Finally, she had someone alive, and she intended to get some answers from him. Anya looked in on Jeff first. He was under the canvas next to a sifting table, on a cot that Jennifer said was the only other one the men hadn't pitched on the bonfire. She felt his forehead. He was cold, clammy, and pale, and his lips had a slight bluish cast. Anya glanced at Suleen, one of the other archaeologists. Suleen was the youngest of the professional crew, a wisp of a woman with thin, wheat-blonde hair.
He's in shock.
Yeah, I know. I've had enough first aid courses to tell me that. Not just from loss of blood, though. We pretty well have that stopped. Though maybe he's got some internal bleeding going on. He's conscious, barely. But he's not talking.
Suleen pulled back the two blankets that were covering Jeff so Anya could see his bandaged leg. His clothing had been loosened to make him more comfortable. She quickly replaced the blankets and tucked him in again. More blankets were draped over two bodies just outside the canopy. Anya didn't need to look to know that Josie and Matthew were under them.
He needs to be in a hospital. An ambo is coming, but it's still a while out, I'll wager. Dr. Michael's got them all coming with one call to the emergency operator. NSW State Police, Local police, fire brigade probably, and the AMBO.
Suleen nodded to her other patient, stretched out on the ground a few yards away. He had not been given a blanket, and two archaeologists stood over him, one with a gun pointed at his head.
He needs a hospital too, but I could give a wombat's ass if he gets one. I only made sure he was still alive and straightened him out a bit so he could breathe better. His neck might be broken.
Thank you for tending me.
You could do with an AMBO yourself. Bullet went right through the fleshy part of your arm, but there could be infection. Ankle's all swollen too. But I didn't do anything for that, didn't have time. You should take Dari with you to the hospital. I'm out of bandages and alcohol. His face should be looked at. Probably needs at least a few stitches.
Anya walked past Suleen, aware that most of the assembly was watching her. She stopped a few feet back from the man on the ground. She put her weight on her left leg and glanced around for a chair. Probably all of them had been pitched on the fire.
Has he said anything?
Both archaeologists watching him shook their heads. Jennifer came up, her face hard and set.
But he will say something. I can guarantee you he'll talk.
We don't even know if he speaks English.
He speaks English, or at least understands enough of it. Look at his eyes. He's following our conversation.
Anya knelt next to him, glad to be off her sore ankle. She wasn't worried he'd attack her. She'd noticed that his wrists and ankles had been tied with the wiry twine they used to secure packed crates. Not even his fingers were twitching. His neck might indeed be broken. Jennifer squatted next to Anya, brandishing a pair of pliers that she'd been holding tight in her left hand.
I stuck the end in the fire. It's nice and hot. I've watched enough spy shows to know how to torture a man.
That might not be necessary.
Jennifer's eyes narrowed, and she clacked the pliers.
Josie's dead, and one of those students. Josie and I went back 20 years. I don't understand why they wanted you so bad that...
Because I got a look at their boss, like I said. The sword, Syed Hussam, if that's his real name. Funny thing is, Oliver probably had no clue that he got a shot of a terrorist.
Anya leaned so close to the man that she could smell the stink of him. Despite the cool weather, he'd been sweating, perhaps hadn't changed clothes for a while, and there were blood spatters on his shirt, though it didn't look to be his blood.
He's dead, isn't he?
Your cameraman?
Yes, my cameraman, Oliver.
He's dead. The American, with the blue eyes and the expensive cameras.
Where is his body?
Gone. Nothing but ashes. Nothing to find. Nothing to bury. And you should have joined him.
He tried to spit at her, but he couldn't work up the saliva, and apparently he couldn't turn his head. Jennifer leaned over him and clacked the pliers again.
I want to know why you killed Josie and that student.
She told you. Sword did not wish to be seen in this place. No witnesses.
The world thinks he's in England.
Yes. Unfortunate that the sword came to this desolate hole on a day when someone was shooting pictures.
Jennifer gripped the pliers so tight that even in the scant light, Anya could see that her knuckles were white. Anya reached up and took the pliers away from her.
The sword does not want Egyptian artifacts. What does the sword want here?
His cause is just.
I read the papers. The sword rarely has a cause beyond money. He doesn't bomb stadiums and blow up buses to make a political point. Someone pays him to do those things.
The people he works for have causes. That is enough. Their cause becomes his cause.
For the right price.
Anya set the pliers down. She noted that Jennifer's eyes were fixed on them.
And what is Dr. Hammam's cause?
The man looked straight ahead, up into the face of the archaeologist with the gun. He set his lips into a thin, defiant line.
I can make him talk!
Anya leaned forward again, put her hands on the man's shoulders, and put all her weight on him.
You will tell us.
His eyes seemed to fix on a spot far from the clearing in the forest preserve.
What does Dr. Hammam want with the sword?
For good measure, she jabbed her knee into his side, noting that he didn't even flinch. Anya detested the notion of torture, but Oliver's face loomed large in the back of her mind.
What foul thing is the sword up to here? You'll tell the police, then.
She pushed off of him and stood.
And I'll tell them all about the sword being in Sydney.
He is the Wind American. He cannot be caught.
The archaeologist holding the gun lowered it and pulled back on the trigger.
I'm betting, mate, that everyone here will say I shot you in self-defense.
I don't know what the sword's ultimate work here is, but it will be glorious and deadly.
Oh, he probably doesn't know. Lackeys like him are usually not let in on the prize. They're merely brought along to help obtain it.
Moments later, a police van drove into sight. There was another car behind it, and a truck that looked like a SWAT wagon. Anya could see the flashing lights. There were more headlights coming through the trees, two more police cars, judging by the height of the flashing lights, and after a moment, another truck. It seemed that Dr. Michaels had been able to lure a small army of police. The side of the van read Cessnock Correctional Center. Two officers got out, guns holstered, but the snap off them so they could be pulled quickly. The taller one pushed his hat back and took a look around. Wes and Jennifer were quick to meet him. Anya held back. Celine looked up at her from where she knelt by Jeff.
No ambo yet?
No, not yet, but the police are a start. The ambulance shouldn't be far behind.
I hope not, for Jeff's sake.
Celine glanced at the cops and then looked back at Jeff.
I wish that friend of yours, Dari, killed that son of a bitch rather than just cracked his neck.
There's been enough killing. Besides, if his neck is broken, that's almost worse than death.
Weariness weighed Anya down like a lead cloak. Despite her nap in the purple pussycat, she was feeling the effects of the ordeal and knew she could do with some more sleep. And maybe a trip to the hospital wouldn't be such a bad idea after all. Grazed, shot, cracked ribs, and a sprained ankle. A little professional mending might be a very good idea. Dari joined her, watching as four more officers, these state police, joined the two from the van. After a few moments, Jennifer led them to the injured killer and gestured at the two bodies. The bald biker's face looked much worse than Anya had realized. Close to the fire, the flames revealed every cut. The gargoyle tattoo was obscured by a smear of blood, and the fleshy ridge above his right eye was torn where one of the men had ripped out his silver hoop. The diamond stud had likewise been ripped out of his nose.
Where's that sword you were swinging? The one you found on the ridge?
I must have dropped it somewhere.
Ah, pity. It was a beaut.
Dari, I'm sorry about all of this. Celine's right. You need to go to a hospital.
I'm in better shape than you. At least I wasn't shot.
At least we're both alive.
Anya didn't know quite what else to say. She'd inadvertently dragged other innocents into her adventures before, but rarely did they get beat up so badly. Anya watched as two of the police officers looked under the blankets at the bodies. A third went to Jeff's cot. The remaining three continued to talk to Wes and Jennifer, all of them hovering around the intruder. Jennifer pointed to Anya, and the police looked her way. Dari raised a bloody eyebrow. Anya could see where bruises were starting to form on his cheeks. They would be large and would cover most of his face.
You gonna talk to them?
I guess I'm gonna have to. But they're not the ones I need to talk to. Those guys are back in Sydney.
Where this Dr. Hammam teaches.
Anya nodded and shuffled toward the three policemen. Jennifer waved a hand in her direction again.
Those men were looking for Anya Creed, the woman who was doing a television special about our dig.
Ambo's coming. So, Miss Creed, what do you have to tell me?
I think my cameraman and I were targeted yesterday after filming. This morning, Ollie was missing, and I got attacked in my hotel room. I tried to chase down one of the shooters, but he got away. I tried to call the police in Sydney, but couldn't get through. I was afraid the men who came after me would come out here after the people still at the digs. I was right. Listen, Dr. Hammam is tied up with Syed the Sword. Just ask that guy tied up there. He confirmed it.
The officer took notes. She waited for someone to accuse her of something, and she half expected to be asked to come downtown with us, ma'am. Instead, the lead officer just nodded.
All right, miss. Don't leave the country for at least a couple more days, and let me know where you'll be staying. Here's my card. You call me anytime if you think there's anything else I should know. Also, contact the city police first thing in the morning. I want to ask you about the incident at the hotel. State investigators are going to want to talk to you too.
Of course.
Take care of yourself, ma'am.
He nodded to her and Jennifer and walked off to confer with his men. Anya knew she could well be wanted in the Sydney hotel matter, and word of it hadn't trickled out to police forces in other towns. Moments later, an ambulance arrived, and Suleen waved frantically to get the paramedics' attention.
Jeff should be going on the helicopter. You can put that bastard on a backboard and take him in the ambo. I want Jeff on the helicopter.
Anya wandered back to Dari.
You should go with them, Dari.
Look, Miss Cree...
Anya.
Are you going? You were shot.
Anya didn't answer. She stared at the flames.
So, you're not going in the ambulance?
No.
You're going to see Dr. Hammam, aren't you?
Yeah.
Seems like you're more than just a television archaeologist.
And you're more than just another bloke from the Cross.
You look me up next time you're in Sydney.
I promise.
Anya felt in her pocket for the keys to the SUV. She had her own ride to the university. At the gas station in the town Dari had mentioned, Anya bought a bottle of painkillers, a comb, a travel toiletries kit, a brush and hair tie, and a brown sweatshirt that displayed a picture of an Australian cattle dog. The other selections featured sharks, Tasmanian devils, boomerangs, Aboriginal flags, and various coats of arms, and were in colors bright enough to add to her headache. Fortunately for Anya, the cop who had driven her back to the SUV just assumed the car was hers. It was a rental, after all, and she had the keys for it. Though she'd been pretty complete in her descriptions of the fight on the ridge and the subsequent one in the student camp, including telling them about the man trapped in the underground temple, she'd neglected to mention lifting the keys. She'd wanted transportation without having to ask someone to chauffeur her around. Unfortunately, the tank was less than a quarter full, and so another stop at a gas station had been in order. But the little store attached to it was turning out to be a godsend. She carried her purchases into the restroom and turned on the tap, filling her hand with cold water and swallowing two pills before tackling anything else. She looked into the mirror and shuddered. Anya had been in plenty of scrapes before, but she couldn't recall when she'd been in so many fights within such a short amount of time.
Dear God, who the hell are you?
Tangled hanks of hair pulled out when she combed it, but after several minutes she'd managed to make it presentable, and she twisted it back into the tie. Her face was another matter. She scrubbed it and scowled at a bluish bruise on her cheek and another on her jaw, the latter turning a vivid purple. Her lower lip was a little swollen. She stared closer. It looked as if she had the makings of a black eye. The travel-sized stick of deodorant and basic makeup in the kit covered most of the evidence of the fight. She realized there was even a little vial of perfume. She dabbed some behind her ears and on her wrists to get rid of some of the stink she'd acquired from her ordeal. She used a liberal amount of the deodorant and threw the rest away. Then she tossed her blouse in the garbage, along with the jacket she'd taken from one of the men. She put on the sweatshirt and decided she looked acceptable enough. Anya knew that in her previous state, she'd never be able to talk her way past any security guard. And that's what she'd probably have to do. On her way back to the cash register, she picked up two ham and cheese sandwiches, a carton of milk, a big green apple, and a handful of candy bars. The clerk seemed as relieved at her transformation as she was.
There you are, miss. Safe travels.
Thanks.
She took them out to the SUV and started eating before she pulled back onto the road. She'd paid for everything with some of the money from the roll she'd taken off one of the men. She was pretty well tapped out after paying the painter for a lift in his pickup. She spotted a speed limit sign as she pulled back on the highway and pointed herself toward Sydney. Anya didn't look down at the dash to see how fast she was going. She knew it was above the limit. She just didn't want to know how much above. Anya feasted quickly, both because she was famished and because she was nervous. Something was up, and she hadn't put the pieces together. The police had heard of the sword, and the officer who'd given her the lift said a bulletin was going out immediately. The police had seemed reluctant to consider Dr. Hammam a threat, especially when Cindy and John came up and reiterated how the professor couldn't have realized what sort of company he was keeping.
Oh, he knew. But what are the two of them up to?
She stashed the wrappers back in the bag and set it on the passenger side of the floorboard. Then, hunkering down and still keeping her eye on the road, she reached under the passenger seat.
Oh, great.
She pulled out a gun and immediately cut her speed. The gun might come in handy, but she still preferred the sword. She put the gun back and felt around a bit more under the seat. She found a map folder, but no more weapons. The map would come in far handier than the gun. She put both hands on the wheel and watched the miles go by. When she neared Sydney, she fished out the map folder. She found one detailed enough of the city to show the university. There was a light attached to the rearview mirror, and she turned it on.
Interesting.
There were 5 circles on the map, drawn in thick pencil. Did they mean something? Or were they drawn by the rent-a-car place in response to a previous driver's questions for tourist stops? She set the map down on the seat and let her thoughts whirl until she turned off into the city. Taking a side street, she pulled over and looked at the map more closely, holding it up to the light. The places marked were near the intersections of George and Argyle Streets in the Rocks area, not far from Circular Quay and the harbor. Another at Harris and Miller. The smallest circle at Bulwara Road and Marianne. One at William and Forest, not far from King's Cross. And the 5th obscured the street names but sat in the middle of a triangle formed by Chinatown, Capital Square, and Paddy's Markets. There were 3 small X marks, too, but they were in the middle of squares and not associated with a particular street. It took her a minute to find the Darlington campus of the university on the next map fold and to trace a route there. That's where she intended to begin, as not a single student at the dig knew where Dr. Hammam lived. At least it would be a start. Someone at the university would tell Anya where Dr. Hammam lived. She could be charming and persuasive when needed. Traffic was light. Sydney seemed like a ghost town at this early hour. Eventually, she came to a small business district that looked as if it had some age to it, but was clean and tidy. The lights burned softly in a bakery, and she imagined that people were already preparing the morning's goods. A going-out-of-business banner was plastered across the window of an art gallery. This part of the city reminded her of one of the smaller New York City boroughs she liked to frequent. She pulled onto one of the university's main drives and noted it was close to 4 a.m. It was a big campus. She could tell that even in the darkness.
How the hell am I going to find him?
A few moments later, she parked next to a kiosk, ghostly lit by a streetlight. She hopped out and searched for a phone book. It didn't take her long to find a faculty directory and map.
Now, why would his office be way over there? Right, because he's temporary, as John said. Just a visitor. And one who has more than worn out his welcome.
She chewed on one of her fingernails and twisted the hem of her sweatshirt with her other hand. Whatever Dr. Hammam and the sword were planning would happen soon, she just knew it. And that meant she didn't have a lot of time to track them down and end it. She got back in the SUV. Anya decided to take Missenden to Parramatta, avoiding the interior of the campus. She didn't see a soul out and about, though she saw quite a few lights on. She took a right on Ross and found Science Road, passed a campus security car that paid her no heed, and rolled into a parking lot. The sign said she needed a parking sticker, but she expected to be in and out before anyone cruised by and noticed her vehicle. Anya walked to the building and tried 3 doors and couldn't find anything open, not even a window she could crawl through. And there was nothing she could climb to reach the 2nd floor and try the windows there. Anya went back to the parking lot and looked around. There were 4 cars. One of them might belong to Dr. Hammam. She went back to the building, to the door closest to the lot, and pounded on it. She paced on the short sidewalk and pounded again, pressed her face to the glass of a small window set halfway up in the door, and peered inside to find the hall beyond dimly lit. Anya bent to get a close look at the lock. There didn't seem to be any way to pick it, and the window was safety glass, the kind that had wire running through it. She was too big to fit through it anyway. A 3rd time pounding, and Anya was just about ready to find campus security and plead her case. But through the small window, she saw a man coming down the hall, arms swinging loosely at his sides. He took his time getting to her, and he only opened the door a crack. She produced her wallet, the way a cop showed his badge on TV shows. It displayed an old press credential card on one side that she'd acquired for doing a series of segments in Europe a few years ago. She'd kept it because it looked impressive and official.
So?
His gray-green shirt was crisp with creases and had a name tag sewn on it, but she could only make out the letters TH.
What can a reporter want at 4 in the morning? And at this building?
I'm with a film crew doing a special on a dig north of Sydney.
Dr. Imam's big project?
Her eyes glistened, and she slipped the tip of her tennis shoe in the door.
Yes, I need to speak with him. It's urgent.
He looked through the window and into the parking lot.
That your car? The big black one?
Yes.
You need a sticker to park there.
Is Dr. Imam here?
I don't think so. He works late, but not this late. And he doesn't come in this early.
Could I check his office? It would only take a moment.
I suppose. Got nothing else to do right now. But you need a sticker for the lot.
I'll risk it.
I'll have to go with you.
Of course.
He let her in and closed the door firmly behind her. Immediately, she was assaulted by the smell of floor polish and disinfectant. Thaddeus was the name on his shirt.
You're the night watchman?
Hardly, though I suppose you could say so. I'm the third shift janitor for this building. And in another hour, I'm going to be heading home for a nice long weekend. So you make this quick?
Of course. Thank you, Thaddeus.
Hammam's office was down a turn in the corridor, nearly at the other end of the hall. They hadn't quite got there when the janitor shook his head and stopped.
No lights. Told you he didn't work this late or come in this early. You could try back on Monday.
I have to go to his house then.
I suppose so.
But I don't know where he lives.
Neither do I.
I bet his address is in his office.
It's locked.
And I bet you have a key.
Anya turned on a dazzling smile and prayed that it would work. For a moment, it looked as if it was lost on him and that he would boot her back out into the parking lot.
I shouldn't be doing this.
I'll be quick. I promise. It's important. Really.
All right.
Thaddeus looked at her, puzzled, and fished out a ring of keys. His fingers went to a tarnished one that had Master written on it on a small piece of masking tape.
But you're not to take anything.
No.
Then be quick. Neither one of us needs to get in trouble.
He opened the door and turned on the light, and after she slipped inside, he stood in the frame, arms crossed in front of his chest.
I really shouldn't be doing this.
She was immediately struck by the plainness of the office. There were no pictures or certificates on the walls, and the bookcases were only half filled. The desk was uncluttered, with in and out baskets on one corner, the phone and a carefully folded newspaper on another. There was a calendar blotter, and she stepped behind the desk. She looked up to see Thaddeus watching her. Today's date was circled in green marker on the calendar, but nothing was written in the space beneath. Previous dates had things marked like student essays due, report to the vice chancellor, evening seminar on the papyrus of Ani. There were also scrawls in hieroglyphics, and Anya wondered if they were doodles or secret reminder notes.
Find an address?
Not yet.
She opened the desk drawer and discovered pens and pencils neatly lined up in a tray, every pencil sharpened to a fine point and not a single mechanical pencil in the bunch. There were index cards, sticky notepads, and paperclips, all of it orderly. Nothing personal, she noted. No photographs of family members or favorite dogs, no candy bars or packs of chewing gum. She looked in another drawer.
You know, I've been thinking. If I had an office, I wouldn't keep my home address listed in it. I'd know where I lived, and I wouldn't need anything to remind me.
I thought maybe I'd find a faculty directory or some letters that had been sent to his home address that he'd brought in. It would be an apartment, I'd think, him being here as a visiting professor, though I suppose he could be renting a house near the campus.
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw that Thaddeus was getting impatient, his knee jumping and his mouth working. She looked through the next drawer, finally finding something personal, a paperweight of an Egyptian pyramid. She turned it over and smiled. Made in China. There were more office supplies, but nothing of interest.
Time to go.
Anya briefly entertained the notion of leaving with him and finding a way to slip back in. She knew where the office was, and therefore which window to break. Maybe she could find something on the bookshelves.
And what's so important anyway that it can't wait for later in the day? Campus operator can maybe help you after 9 or so. Why not wait for Monday?
Because I think your visiting professor is involved with an international terrorist, and I want to know what they're up to.
I wouldn't doubt it. He's an odd duck, that one. Strange hours, strange visitors.
She looked up and studied his face. The janitor wasn't kidding.
What visitors?
Aside from you? Well, yesterday, and maybe it was the day before. A Middle Eastern gentleman. I'd be hard-pressed to tell you what country he was from. Thought he'd snuck in here without me seeing. Not much passes by me, though. Small man, but I didn't like the looks of him. Face all scarred. I would have tossed him out, but I just didn't want to...
Confront him?
Yeah.
Anya dug through the rest of the drawers in a frenzy.
He's a terrorist, that man you saw, and he goes by the name of the Sword.
What's he doing with Dr. Amam?
That's what I'm trying to find out. Damn, nothing.
He also spent a lot of time at the museum on campus. Or so he told me one night. We've quite the Egyptian display. I went through it once, took my middle son. But it doesn't open till noon on Saturdays.
Anya came around the desk so quickly and clumsily that she knocked over the wastebasket. Crumpled and burned papers tumbled out. She eased down on the floor and started going through them. There was an acrid scent to them, as if they'd been burned fairly recently. She thought she should have noticed the smell immediately, but then the scent of floor polish and disinfectant had hung heavily out in the hall.
Find something.
Maybe. Just give me a little bit more time.
Didn't like the looks of that scarred fellow at all. Wasn't the disfigurement, mind you.
He rocked back on his heels, looked left and right out of the office to make sure no one else was about during this ungodly early hour. He leaned back in.
I didn't like the way he walked, all skulky-like, and the way he kept his head down. He was dressed too good, an expensive suit like you'd see on a movie star or a politician.
Anya picked up the largest crumpled piece. It had been on the bottom and was charred the least. She carefully opened it.
Hey, what's it say?
Thoth is the judge of right and truth of the company of gods, all in the presence of Osiris. Hear Thoth's judgment. Osiris's heart has been weighed, and the soul of that heart has provided testimony. His heart has been found right according to the trial in the great balance. I think it's a translation from the Book of the Dead.
What?
It's not really a book, it's just called that. There's more here. Osiris, no wickedness has been found inside him, and he has not committed an evil act. He is worthy of the offerings that are made in his temples. His mouth does not speak evil words. Interesting, but not useful.
Anya looked at the rest of the pieces, not able to make out any complete sentences. Thaddeus knelt in front of her and tried to help.
Pipe, pump, 100 psi, 150 psi. It's all imperial measurements, not metric. Means pounds per square inch.
But inch of what? Water? Gas? Solid?
She unfolded a half-charred receipt for truck rentals. 3. No clue to the size or the company. Then she found part of an address, which she showed to the janitor.
It's not all that awfully far from here. It's an old industrial complex. My dad used to work at the Pullman factory there, but it's closed now.
Anya slowly stood and paced in a tight circle.
Think, think, think.
Then she paced in front of one of the bookshelves, eyes scanning the titles while her mind continued to whirl. Ancient Egypt by Daniel Cohen. Ancient Egypt by Geraldine Harris. Ancient Egypt by George Hart. The Egyptians by Roger Coote. Ramses II and Egypt by Oliver Tiano. The Nubians, People of the Ancient Nile by Robert Beinche. Gods and Pharaohs from Egyptian Mythology. High Pressure Pumps Instruction Manual. She stopped at the last title and pulled it from its spot, passing it to Thaddeus.
What do you make of this?
He thumbed through it as he stood.
Pretty basic. Imperial again, not metric. Sad Daddy got it here. Tells you how to operate water pumps and connect them to various lines.
Anya's throat grew instantly dry. Inside the underground temple to Hathor, beyond the burial chamber, was the pond covered with dead fish. She hadn't given it any thought when she saw them, other than noting how absolutely awful they smelled.
The fish were dead because the water had been poisoned. And the manual on water pumps, rented trucks... It means they're going to poison something bigger. A lot bigger.
She wrapped her arms around herself and tried to absorb the enormity of what she guessed was about to transpire.
I think they mean to poison Sydney's water and kill an awful lot of people. Dear God, why?